following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
People are killing, they'll do anything. Feel their bodies with poison things just to feel good. Everything I learned be so hard. Can't you see I'm giving up? I don't know where you are. Where are you? All in black clouds come over me. They darken my skies. And it's how I look at things to give me new eyes.
Do you or someone you know suffer from addiction? While many of us have an addiction to something, we have few places to turn to get the help we need. Welcome to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. Learning about addiction and that you are not alone is the first step in getting things back on track. Our show will bring you to that first step and much more. Now, here is Rebecca Bullion.
Good morning, everyone in our listening audience. This is Rebecca Bullion, and you're listening to Addiction in America. I've got a wonderful guest today, Dr. John Caldwell of The Meadows. Hello, Dr. Caldwell.
Oh.
Hey, I'm so glad to have you here, and I'm so interested in your work. I just want to read a little bit about you. You're a board-certified psychiatrist who specializes in the treatment of adults with relational trauma and addictive behaviors.
That's right.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about your work at The Meadows.
Well, The Meadows is a treatment center in Wickenburg, Arizona, which is about 45 minutes to the northwest of Phoenix, Arizona. And we've been doing this kind of work for 35 years. We are one of the world leaders in treating addiction and trauma, and I'm a full-time psychiatrist on staff here.
I understand that you recently were awarded a nice research grant from the International Society for Traumatic Stress Studies. Can you tell us about that?
You bet. It's a competitive grant program, and I applied for a grant, and I was very honored to receive it. And it's a research proposal that will look at a mindfulness-based workshop for promoting attachment security in women who have experienced trauma in their life. And there's very few mindfulness-based interventions out there that address attachment. And so this was an opportunity for us to try and do this. And there's also not as many treatments and interventions that are attachment-based for individuals. There's attachment-based interventions for families and for couples and for parents and children. But this is actually an intervention for adult individuals, and so we're very excited to pilot this program. We hope to offer it to alumni that have been here at The Meadows in the past.
Well, I'm sure that that will become part of your regular practice, what you develop there at The Meadows.
I hope so.
Yeah, yeah. Today, the title of our show is something that I got off of your blog. It's Facing the Truth Behind the Mask, and I wanted to tie that into how addiction and attachment become a mask. And in your article, you talk about, you make an analogy that behind the mask is like, you know, Greek tragedies that typically dealt with themes such as betrayal or loss, pride, jealousy, rage, and the actors in these plays would have elaborate masks with exaggerated facial expressions. And I really like the way that you did this article, which, by the way, I got it off of the Addiction Recovery Reality Meadows blog. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what is meant by Behind the Mask, and then Life Scripts. I want to ask you about Life Scripts.
You bet. Well, the idea of the article was really to try to develop a metaphor for understanding how sometimes we move through life. And the idea is that a lot of times we are acting out of old scripts that we inherited from our early experiences in early attachment relationships. And that these early attachment relationships are so powerful in writing into our neurobiology the script of how we might respond to other people, how we might think about ourselves and about the world and about others around us, how we will respond emotionally. And so the idea was that many times we are on kind of the stage of life acting out of this script with very little awareness of what, of why we're actually acting that way. Sometimes we're not even aware of the script that we have. And so the idea is that sometimes we need to step back away from the script a little bit and get a little help through treatment to take a look at those early scripts and see if it's really healthy for us to be acting out of that script and to be oftentimes reacting out of the script. I mean, many times, for example, when somebody approaches us and says something that may hit one of those hot buttons that we have, you know, that really kind of goes right to the core, and that core oftentimes is related to early experience with caregivers, we might react in a way that seems not characteristic of our usual actions, but is really kind of the reactivity out of that early script. And the idea is to back up away from the scripts and to analyze them and to look at them and to really see if there's maybe a more healthy way of living, a more authentic and true way of living, where we're not just kind of reacting out of those early experiences, but really, you know, choosing to act in a different way. And that takes some treatment. That takes some work to do that.
How, when somebody comes into the Meadows, how do you help them understand what their life script is?
Yeah, I think the Meadows, you know, we don't specifically talk about doing attachment work here, but we do a lot of attachment work here. It's really wonderful to work in this environment because I've been researching attachment for many years, and it's what my PhD is based on. And so it's just so thrilling to be actually doing clinical work that addresses this. So one of the ways that we start talking about and having people think about their attachment experiences is that we have this very broad definition of early what we call relational trauma, that there are types of trauma that are overt, things like, you know, physical abuse or sexual abuse, and then there are covert forms of trauma. This might include emotional abuse or verbal abuse. It might include enmeshment, which is this kind of overly close relationship with a parent who is, you know, overly intrusive in a child's life. It might include divorce, loss of a parent, or abandonment. And so we have this very broad definition of trauma, and it gets people thinking about how their childhood experiences have affected them later in their life. And then we do some really, I think, cutting-edge type of therapy around early experiences. We do very experiential type therapy. It's more than just talk therapy. It's really getting people to experience these emotions that have been there for a long time within their body, to reconnect with some part of themselves that maybe has been cut off or isolated, and to have some experiences with trained providers that allow them to really come into contact with things that they have probably either avoided or been running from for a long, long time. And so we have them, for example, do a timeline where they draw out their life experience, and then they present that to a therapist. We have what we call survivor's workshop in the second week of treatment, where they do a lot of experiential work and inner child work. We have a family week process where actually they have contact with family members where they maybe have had struggles with these people in the past, and they're able to develop communication skills and sometimes do some very powerful work to correct some of those relationship problems. So many things that we do here are geared towards that.
Let me interrupt you there, and I don't want to skip over to make sure that the base is covered of what are the basics of attachment theory.
You bet. This is a theory that was proposed by John Bowlby, many years ago. And basically he said that early experiences with our caregivers are very important in how we develop as people. And this was a radical idea at the time. It doesn't sound like a radical idea now, but it really was then. And he was ostracized from, you know, from conferences and wasn't allowed to speak with people and wasn't allowed to publish because of this idea. Now we know that this is very, very true. And he said that early attachment relationships are important for survival, that young children come into the world with a profound degree of helplessness, and they need an older, wiser, and stronger adult to kind of show them the way. And now we know that this attachment bond, this relationship between a caregiver and a child, is critical to brain development. That we come into the world with a brain that is just ready to capture social experience, that is waiting for social input, and that the brain is developing in the context of that social environment. And so the attachment relationship is critical for appropriate and proper and adaptive brain development.
So when I think of the types of attachment, I think of secure attachment. And what are the other types?
So this was work done by a colleague of Bowlby early in his career, Mary Ainsworth, who studied really mother-child interactions in Africa and in the United States. And she found that there were some patterns to these interactions. And she found that there was a secure attachment style where a child felt very secure with the parent. They felt safe. They felt like if there was a separation, that when the parent came back, they could reunite and they could be together. There was a sense that the child could explore the world and still go back and maintain a connection with the parent. That was secure attachment. Some children showed a style where they seemed to have trouble trusting that the parent would be there for them when they needed the parent. And they had a little bit of an avoidant style. We call this avoidant attachment, that they oftentimes felt like they needed to take care of their own attachment needs, that they couldn't rely on other people, that they had to suppress their emotions in relationships and you know, not ruffle any feathers. Then there's a third basic style of an attachment, and that is an anxious or preoccupied attachment style. In this style, the child oftentimes feels that something is wrong with them and that their parent will leave them or abandon them. Oftentimes they've had experiences with a parent who is sometimes there and sometimes not there. And so they become very clingy, very fearful of separation, and sometimes ambivalent about, you know, they sometimes will push the parent away and then sometimes want to hold on to the parent very tightly.
Okay.
And these styles seem to set a child on a trajectory into the future and have, you know, long-standing consequences for adult relationships and for mental health and for emotion regulation, those kinds of things.
Okay. I want to talk about that some more when we come back from commercial. We've talked about secure, anxious, and avoidant attachment, and we're going to continue. So join us after the commercial.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Please visit Rebecca's website at www.addictioninamerica.com to get more information on today's show, our guests, and other resources. The website contains a bookstore of material by various authors, musicians, and instructional videos to download. Applications for case management, referrals, and intervention can be made through the bookstore as well. Be sure to visit addictioninamerica.com. Addiction in America is here to help you take control of your life. The website again is www.addictioninamerica.com.
Step into the doorway to conscious choice, greater health, and well-being. Attain the balance that you've been seeking. Tune in and turn on 1111 Talk Radio. Feed the mind. Embrace positively. Release the tension. Step out of fear. Host Simran Singh will help you broaden your mind and open your heart toward a greater understanding of how to take charge of your life. 1111 Talk Radio is here every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on Seventh Wave Network. 1111 Talk Radio, because shift happens.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Again, that's Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Now, back to the show.
Well, welcome back. This is Rebecca. And I wanted to mention, we're still with Dr. John Caldwell of the Meadows. If anyone listening would want to inquire about treatment at the Meadows, you can dial 1-800-MEADOWS, and you can also call into the show today and ask questions. That call-in number would be 866-472-5792. And also, if you like Addiction in America, please do follow on Facebook and Twitter under Addiction in America. So I want to continue on with our talk that we're having about attachment, and we have begun to talk about secure, anxious, and avoidant attachment. And I wanted to start with a question of how does childhood maltreatment affect early attachment relationships? Dr. Caldwell?
This has been one of my great interests because there's lots of research now showing that early maltreatment, child maltreatment, really has far-reaching consequences. There's really, I think, compelling data to show that early maltreatment affects relationships in adulthood. It affects our mental health and emotional health, and it even affects our physical health, that people who have experienced maltreatment in childhood tend to have more physical health problems in adulthood. So this is an important issue, and I think one of the reasons why maltreatment can have such a profound effect is that it seems to disrupt attachment relationships. And attachment relationships are important, like I said earlier, for brain development and for emotion regulation and for being able to cope with stressors in our life. And so we learn how to deal with stress in early life through this kind of day-in, day-out, dyadic, back-and-forth relationship that we have with our caregivers. And that sets the groundwork in our brain to be able to regulate our emotions, to be able to regulate ourselves and our behavior, to be able to cope with stress. And, of course, if you don't have that early relationship, or if it's an insecure attachment relationship, then it leaves you vulnerable to stress, and that, you know, creates some wear and tear on the body and can result in physical health problems in addition to all the other kind of emotional and mental health problems.
So if a child has a daily stressful interaction and they observe a parent being stressed out quite a bit, how's that going to affect them negatively at the age of like 2 or 3, for starters?
Exactly. Well, if you think about a child who think about a common occurrence in childhood, a child who maybe falls down and skins their knee, right? This is a distressing situation for a child. They may be crying. And in that situation, if you have a parent who is available and who is sensitive to the needs of the child, then oftentimes the parent will pick up the child and say, oh, there. And there's this kind of soothing voice that they will have with the child. They may use some distraction techniques like, oh, look at over there. Look at the pretty butterfly. And then they'll kind of be patting the child on the back. They may, you know, use some kind of a technique like, you know, gone, all the hurt is gone. And all of these techniques are a way of helping the child to regulate their distressing emotions. And so you do that day in and day out, over and over and over again. And the child then learns how to regulate their own emotions. What once was a dyadic experience between two people becomes integrated into the child, into their psyche, into their neurobiology. And so these experiences are happening day in and day out and become really the groundwork, the underpinnings for the regulation that this person will be able to utilize later in life.
So there's a balance between paying attention to the pain or the issue and then distracting and not focusing too much on the problem, I guess.
I think that's a wonderful point, Rebecca. This is actually an area of interest of mine, that it's not just a dismissal of negative emotion. Usually parents who have a secure attachment with their child usually are able to tolerate negative affect. They're able to be present with it. I think it's one of the keys to secure attachment in parenting, that they are able to really be with the intense emotions that their child might bring and not dismiss them or run away from them or, you know, push them away, but at the same time to be able to metabolize them, to be able to break them down for the child, to be able to put a label to them, to be able to help the child to soothe themselves. And this is really key and important, I think, in parenting.
When I heard you speak in October, you mentioned dandelion and orchid children. Could you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, I think this is a very interesting metaphor. So there's been some really fascinating research on the interplay between genes and environment. And we know that genes play a role, but for a long time, you know, in the late 90s, for example, or throughout the 80s and 90s, we weren't able to associate genes with a particular mental health problem. And what we now know is that genes interact with the environment. So it's not just the genes that are contributing to, you know, some sort of mental health problem or emotional problem, but it's really the combination of genes and environment. But now what they know is that there's probably certain genes that make a person more susceptible to their environment. So it turns out that some kids are just more, they're more like a sponge. They tend to soak up the environment. And if the environment is a good environment and they have positive parenting and they have a good secure attachment relationship with their parent, they'll soak that up. If their relationship is insecure, if there are negative aspects to their environment, then they'll soak that up. And so some children are like orchids that they take a lot of care and they're really sensitive to the environment, but they can really bloom when the environment is healthy. And some kids are like dandelions. Some kids, because of their genetics and because of their early, early history, maybe even in the womb, they tend to be more resilient. They tend to, you can, like a dandelion, you can kind of throw those seeds out in any environment and it'll kind of grow up and do okay. So some kids tend to be more resilient and less susceptible to the environment. And this happens to be the case in parenting as well. Some kids are just more susceptible to our parenting interventions. And some kids are probably less susceptible. And that doesn't mean that parenting isn't important to them, but it just means that they're going to probably weather things a little bit better. Some kids are just very sensitive.
When I think of orchids, I think of fragile, you know, really fragile, and you have to take care and create the right environment so that growth will happen for the flower. And this is where parents really need to be mindful.
You bet.
Yes.
Yeah. But the point is, too, that with that care, they can be very successful. I mean, like an orchid is just, you know, beautiful and wonderful to behold. For these children that sometimes I think we've thought of as being genetically vulnerable, we now maybe can shift our perspective on this and say that they're really more genetically susceptible. If we can create a positive environment for them, they can really do well.
Okay, so it's not all written in stone. What would you say a parent would look for if their child were becoming anxiously attached? How would they know?
Well, for the anxious attachment style, these children oftentimes have a hard time separating from the parent. One of the key basic features of attachment is that a child who has a secure attachment with a parent is more likely to explore their environment. And this is really important for development. Children need to branch out. They need to play with toys. They need to play with other children. They need to go outside and explore the world, and children are more likely to do that if they feel they have a secure attachment relationship. So children who have an insecure attachment that is of the anxious style tend to be less prone to exploring their environment. They want to stay close to their parent because they're afraid that if they leave, their parent may not come back, or that they may do something that will drive their parent away, and so they really cling tightly to the parents. So you might notice that your child is having a hard time with separating. Now, there is, of course, a normal stage of separation and anxiety, and this should not be confused with an insecure attachment style. All children go through that stage.
How would a parent know if their child was becoming avoidantly attached?
So for an avoidant child, oftentimes these children tend to have some difficulty expressing themselves. As a child, they may be somewhat shut down emotionally. They may not feel very open to physical contact. They may shy away from closeness. And I think it's really important to recognize that when we say a child is avoidantly attached or anxiously attached, we're not really speaking of a quality of the child per se. We're really talking about the nature of the attachment relationship. It's really about that relationship with the parent, because a child could have an anxious attachment style with one parent and a secure attachment style with another parent. It's really talking about the nature of that bond, that attachment relationship. And over time, when there's consistent patterns of those relationships, then they can kind of consolidate into personality characteristics as the child grows into adulthood. But as a child, it's really talking about the relationship. So I think the key about how to recognize what's going on in the relationship is really to be more aware of our own behavior as parents. That'll have the biggest effect on the child's attachment relationship.
And that, you know, really does instill hope. I know, you know, we therapists, we just love to label, right? We just have
right.
to know so that we can assess and, you know, treat accordingly. But to say that the environment is so important is actually a relief, because the environment is changeable.
I agree with that. Yep.
So how would you say, I just want to ask one more question. We're talking about early childhood symptoms of anxious and avoidant attachment. How would you know if your child was becoming this way based on the environment when they were 8 or 9 or 10?
You know, that's a very good question. We have less data on this. We know less about what attachment looks like in middle childhood and in adolescence. There are some ways to measure it, but the gold standard for measuring attachment has really been developed in infants and toddlers. So I think there's a lot we're trying to learn about what attachment looks like in those stages of development. We do know that communication is very important, that a child's ability and capacity to be able to discuss emotions with a parent is very important. Now, I'm a parent myself, and I have a preteen, and I understand that, you know, discussing emotions with a teenager is not always a very smooth endeavor, but
it always goes great.
Right. So, you know, I think the key is that a child at that developmental stage feels safe to talk about it if they want to and if they need to. They may not always choose to. They may choose to talk with their peers, but that they have this environment at home where they feel safe to be able to explore all of those kind of issues that come up in adolescence about, you know, individuation and separation and, you know, being able to try on new ideas. There should be an environment where that child who's, you know, moving into adulthood can do that. And that may be part of what secure attachment looks like in adolescence.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break. And I think after that, we're going to have caller David, who's going to ask some questions. So join
Great.
Us in a minute or so. Okay.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Please visit Rebecca's website at www.addictioninamerica.com to get more information on today's show, our guests, and other resources. The website contains a bookstore of material by various authors, musicians, and instructional videos to download. Applications for case management, referrals, and intervention can be made through the bookstore as well. Be sure to visit addictioninamerica.com. Addiction in America is here to help you take control of your life. The website again is www.addictioninamerica.com.
It's no secret that teen girls and young women all across North America are struggling with diminished self-worth, depression, eating disorders, and self-harm. The good news? Tune in to The Mary Walden Show for a mental health boost. Raising and empowering young women, mind, body, and spirit. Join Mary and her guests, clinicians, artists, musicians, and researchers to get the knowledge and the know-how to build resilience in teen girls and young women today. The Mary Walden Show airs live Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Again, that's Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Now, back to the show.
Well, thanks for rejoining us. This is Rebecca, and I just want to say that we have a caller, David, on the line. David, are you there?
Hi. Well, thanks for taking my call, Rebecca.
Well,
I'm going to make a statement and then ask a question, okay? And I'm making a statement because other people may have a question about something that's said, and you might want to address this, doctor. But it seems counterintuitive. As a parent myself, it seems odd to say that, well, I'm going to use a term that you won't like necessarily, but to say that coddling a child would help them learn to self-regulate. It actually seems that it would cause the opposite to happen. It also seems like being overly secure can be a disadvantage to people in a modern changing environment. Even approval seeking, which is caused by this stress or insecurity, is even often rewarded in offices. So having said that statement, I got a question. Now, we're talking about children right now, but as far as adults go, and I think we treat adults, if this is a brain development process, should we try to change it, or is it something we want to change, or is it something that the patient or the growing person should just be aware of and adapt to?
Great question. Dr.
Yeah, thank you. Wonderful question. Well, I may just comment first on your comment, which I think is a very good comment. This was actually the contention of Bowlby's contemporaries, of psychoanalysts at the time. They said that a close relationship between a parent and child will just lead to dependency. And this was, you know, one of their strong arguments against attachment theory early on. But there's a lot of data showing that a secure attachment relationship actually helps the child then to be more autonomous, more able to go out on their own, to form their own ideas, and to be able to adapt to life and to the various kind of difficulties they encounter. That being said, I think your point is a very good one, that sometimes it can be overdone. And we are now, I think there's more and more research looking at this idea of helicopter parents and overly intrusive parenting, and there's a lot of research coming out that this does, in fact, get in the way of appropriate development. And certainly here at the Meadows, we see this quite often, parents who have been overly involved and doing too much for their children. So there is this balance, I think, that happens in secure attachment. And one of the key elements of parenting behavior in a secure attachment relationship is sensitivity, the ability to be able to recognize the child's cues, to recognize the demands of the environment, and to be able to adapt to what the child will need to be most successful in the environment. So kind of written into attachment theory is this idea that being sensitive to the child and to the environment is important. And so, you know, too much involvement to the point where the child isn't able to develop the skills that they need to be successful in the environment of upbringing, I think is a problem. So that very good comment. Your question about whether or not we should, whether or not there is an intervention for this, given that attachment seems to have some effects on brain development and childhood development, and whether we should intervene. Great question. Of course, my own personal take is that that we can intervene, that there are interventions that are effective, and that it can be meaningful down the road for people. And actually, I think that there's interventions that are possible for adults who have had insecure attachment relationships in childhood and maltreatment in childhood. We do that kind of work day in, day out here at the Meadows, and I think we do it very well. There are also some early interventions that are attachment-based that seem to have very good results. There's been a number of longitudinal studies that show that if you can intervene early, you can really help ameliorate some of the long-term consequences that are associated with chaotic and unstable home environments. So I think that there is a benefit for early intervention, and there are interventions that are effective.
Excellent. Thank you.
I wanted to comment also, David, that it seems like when we're talking about anxious or avoidant attachment, when we get into adulthood, we're talking about discomfort in relationships. I know in other languages, people don't say my relationship or a relationship. They verbalize it as how are you relating to people in your world. And so if a person is relating to someone and they're experiencing discomfort, then that's where addiction comes in, and that's, you know, what we want to talk about next, or medicating, or with anything. So, David, did you have another question?
No, but I like that. That's a good takeaway. So you're talking about, instead of relationship as a noun, like just something I can pick up and put in my pocket, I have a relationship and you don't, ha ha. You're saying relating is a verb, an active verb. Is that right?
Yes, yes, I love that.
I have a choice is how I relate at this moment with the people around me. Okay, well, thank you so much. You two have been a lot of help.
Thanks for calling in, David. And we have another caller, Robert. Robert, are you on the line?
I'm here.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Do you have a question for Dr. Caldwell?
I sure do. I've really got my attention talking about this attachment, secure attachment, avoidance attachment. And in my situation, I'm divorced. I have an 8-year-old son. And in the process of our divorce for several years, it's been very, very tense. We don't get along. We're in court on and off. And mom has determined she wants our son tested for ADD.
I see.
And from my perspective, I'm thinking if he has any issues at all, it's more of a post-traumatic stress thing because he's constantly in the middle of the battle between mom and dad. And now there's a stepfather, and there's been a little bit of an abuse situation involved there in court. And so now we get to a point where mom reports a lot of bad behavior. If I tell him to get in the car, he runs and hides. He won't brush his teeth, you know, things of that nature, or acts up in the store, where when he's with me, I don't get that type of behavior.
I see.
I'm kind of wondering, you know, can there be one thing I'm wondering, can there be a different attachment with mom and than there is with dad?
This is a great question. I think there's a couple of elements to your question that are very important. The first one is how relationship turmoil in childhood can present. And, I think we might be a little quick these days to diagnose ADHD. There's, I think, this is a very hot subject, and so I'll be cautious not to upset anybody, but I think that it's probably safe to say that we're probably a little quick to diagnose ADHD, especially in the context of a setting that you're describing, which is a lot of change and some things that would be very difficult for a child to be able to manage. And we know that this kind of disruption in childhood can definitely present as inattention, difficulty with regulating behavior and emotions, some acting out behavior. So I think it's probably wise to step back a little bit and look at the context as a whole before jumping on the diagnosis of ADHD. There's a lot of things that could be done with the communication between the adults and this child, offering the child more support, other things that could be done that could be very meaningful for the behavior and for the attention problems that you're seeing right now. In terms of your second question, Absolutely. There can be a different attachment relationship with one parent compared to another parent. Because the attachment label is really about the relationship and not necessarily about the child, although there may be some very mild genetic tendencies towards one insecure style versus another, the avoidant versus anxious. Primarily, this is speaking to a relationship between a parent and a child. So you're absolutely right that there might be a better fit. I like to think about it as a fit. There might be a better fit between one parent and the child compared to the other parent and a child. So the other parent, where that fit is not quite right, could do some work on this. They could make the environment safer. They could reduce some of the stressors in the environment. They could make sure that the child is safe and not exposed to any kind of maltreatment. And then they could work on really trying to be more sensitive to the child's cues, to maybe just spending quality time with the child. So there's much that can be done to help shore up that insecure relationship.
Dr. Caldwell?
Yep.
We have another caller, Anastasia, on the line.
Okay.
Robert, thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you.
Anastasia, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, did you have a question for Dr. Caldwell?
Yes. Thank you, Ms. Billion and Dr. Caldwell. My question, sir, is when attachment disorder becomes an addiction in an adult, long story short, I have a lifetime of my addiction has been abandonment in relationships, uh-huh. romantic relationships. And, of course, you know, I grew up with severe abandonment, trauma, abuse, you know, my whole childhood, that's all I knew. So it set me up, of course. Every time I got into a romantic relationship and the man left me, I went right back. And, I mean, I would be sick for years, and I would cling, and I wouldn't let go, and I was totally codependent, mm-hmm. and I've been like this for over 30 years, and I've done a lot of recovery work, but still, I guess my question is, how is an adult, when it becomes an addiction, of course, it's in adulthood, other than, you know, getting lots of recovery work and inner child work and healing it, and of course going to the meadows, is there another way locally that you would recommend to heal that? To heal it to where it, you know, where a person is restored to their wholeness.
Thank you. Yes, I feel for your situation, and I appreciate your courage to call in and talk about it. I think your experience is very, very common, and so I think many people listening will be encouraged by your call. It's interesting, your terming it an addiction is interesting because that's exactly the term that we use here at the Meadows. We actually treat love addiction and love avoidance. And these two patterns map onto attachment theory very, very nicely. And so I've done a lot of research on adult attachment, but it was wonderful to come to the Meadows and see that we have a way to work with individuals who might be displaying these kind of signs and symptoms of attachment, rather love avoidance and love addiction. In terms of what can you do in your local area to get some help with this, it sounds like you have done some work already, and I'm happy that you have. The fact that you can call and actually talk openly about it shows that you have made some progress. There are some therapists who are trained in being able to deal with love addiction, and they may have some specific skills in that area, and they may also be skilled in dealing with codependence. So that might be one thought.
May I interject that,
yes.
You know, there's the 12-step meeting, SLAA, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, meetings that are, you know, I realize one of the primary reasons I wanted to do the show is because I'm concerned about people that need treatment that don't have financial resources and, you know, we heal in community, we heal in relationship, so, having boundaries and trying to relate in a healthier way is hugely important. And so right now, we're going to go to break. And, Anastasia, if you would like to stay on the line, we can continue talking after the break. Is that okay?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Let's go on to break.
future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
Please visit Rebecca's website at www.addictioninamerica.com to get more information on today's show, our guests, and other resources. The website contains a bookstore of material by various authors, musicians, and instructional videos to download. Applications for case management, referrals, and intervention can be made through the bookstore as well. Be sure to visit addictioninamerica.com. Addiction in America is here to help you take control of your life. The website again is www.addictioninamerica.com.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Again, that's Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Now, back to the show.
Thanks so much for rejoining us. I want to mention that the call-in line for the Meadows is 1-800-MEADOWS, and also that the Meadows has a program called the Meadows Helping Hand, and in this, they are giving round-trip airfare for a patient and two family members, plus a week's lodging for two family members to come to Family Week in order to help people afford treatment. So, Anastasia, did you are you there? Anastasia?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, did you want to make another comment or ask another question?
Okay, well, so from what I heard from both of you, especially you, Rebecca, you mentioned that there are love addiction support groups.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, I will definitely look into that because, as I said before, my lifelong addiction has, you know, been invisible. It's not drugs or alcohol.
Right.
It's when someone breaks up, I'm going to die and I can't live and I go right back into the, you know, age regression and I get sick and it's a disease for me and it's an addiction and it keeps recycling. So it just tells me I still need to heal this. I'm 47. I've been going through this for 30 years, but it's still there. That's how deep the wounds were, but there is hope and I'm going to go forward with that. And I want to thank you, Dr. Caldwell, for your wonderful work and this topic and also Rebecca for your help as well. Thank you both so much.
Anastasia,
yes.
If you wanted to sign up for any kind of case management services through my website at addictioninamerica.com, I might be able to direct you to appropriate resources and we can talk about your case a little bit more. So send me an email at rebecca@addictioninamerica.com. And
I will do that.
Thanks for joining us.
Also, pleasure.
I just had a few comments to Anastasia.
Yes.
So, Rebecca, your point is very good that for people who might have a hard time coming into treatment, there are a lot of resources in the community. 12-step programs and groups are one resource very, very valuable. You might also be able to find a therapist who has been trained in this regard. PMLody has written several books on codependence and on love addiction, and you can read those books. And you can also, PMLody has trained many therapists, and I know there are some therapists in your local area that have received training directly from PMLody, and so you may be able to find a therapist who is very well trained in this. The other thing I think is really exciting is that there's some data that being able to form a positive relationship with a therapist can help heal some of those attachment wounds, because the therapeutic alliance between a therapist and a client in some ways resembles an intimate, close relationship. And so some of those hiccups in being able to relate to other people can be worked out in therapy. And the final point is that there's a little bit of data showing that if a person has experienced a lot of attachment insecurity in their life, if they eventually can find a secure attachment relationship in adulthood, that over a period of years, their attachment style shifts and becomes more secure, so that you can actually, some of these things can be worked out in relationship with somebody who is secure themselves. Now, of course, that requires, you know, finding that person and being able to, you know, be ready for a healthy relationship. And you know, I have a lot of hope too, Anastasia, that you can get there.
Thank you. That sounds like using the relationship itself as a tool to heal.
That's right.
That's right.
I'm all for it.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much. You have a great day.
All right. You too. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, wow, you know, that does bring up so much of, you know, what do we do to heal? And we've already established that there is hope in adulthood. And tell us just a little bit about how mindfulness plugs in right here at this point where we're talking.
You bet. This is an area of interest for me. My mentor for many years now is Phil Shaver. He's one of the leading experts in attachment. And he was one of the scientists invited to speak with the Dalai Lama. And the reason why the Dalai Lama was interested in this field of attachment research is because he was able to recognize from the research that people who have a secure attachment in childhood tend to be more healthy in adulthood. They tend to be more compassionate towards others, and they tend to be more altruistic and giving and generous. And, of course, this interests the Dalai Lama. And so this really kind of started a little bit of interest in the idea of mindfulness, which is really kind of bringing a non-judgmental, accepting presence to our every moment. And so people became interested in mindfulness and the link between that and attachment. And I have been very interested in this. And it turns out that mindfulness shares some of the same aspects with secure attachment, that people who are securely attached seem to regulate emotions in a very mindful way. And so part of what I'm interested in doing is seeing whether or not we could help people to increase their capacity for mindfulness and whether or not this would improve relationships.
Wow. Well, I just want to say again that you know, what you can feel, you can heal. I'm stealing a title from a book I have on my bookshelf. What you can feel, you can heal. And I know that it's so hard for people to feel their feelings and manage that.
That's right.
Either they're underwhelmed or overwhelmed.
Yeah, this is exactly right. Yeah.
So again, the Meadows has the Meadows Helping Hand program. Please call 1-800-MEADOWS if you're interested. We're going to have to close down now, but I also want to say if, listening audience likes Addiction in America, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And, Dr. Caldwell, I just thank you so much for being here. And I also want to put a word in that people can look at the blog on the Meadows website at themeadows.com and read more of your articles.
That's right. I've written some articles there about attachment and on other subjects, and so you can follow a lot of us there on the blog.
Maybe we can have you in again sometime to talk about how your mindfulness research project is going.
I'd like that very much, Rebecca. It's been a real thrill talking with you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I could have, you know, continued on. I had a list of questions because there's just so much talking about, you know, how physical health is affected by attachment and all this. But we'll be looking for some of that information in your blog, okay?
Sounds good.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And again, listening audience, if you want to email in, please send me an email at Rebecca@addictioninamerica.com. It can be about today's show or anything that you'd like to hear about and any kind of comment at all, and I will read them on the show next week. So thank you for joining us, and this is Rebecca with Addiction in America. Till next week.
Thank you for listening to Addiction in America. Please join Rebecca Bullion again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time, and 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Until our next program, have a good week, and may you be one step closer to conquering your addiction.
I'm having a hard time just trying to understand all the suffering, the misery that man goes through.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.